On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And on the Commons with us today, we have the first ever, I understand, ombudsman strictly for condominiums in Florida, Dr. Virgil Rizzo. Virgil, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Sue.
You told me the other day that you're the first condominium ombudsman, right?
That's my understanding, yes. Certainly the first for Florida.
The first for Florida. Now, Florida had the Division of Business and Professional Regulations that was tasked, I guess, with overseeing condominiums. Is that correct?
Yes, the Division of condominiums is within the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. It's a state agency that governs licensure. Well, it used to be the Department of Professional Regulation. It used to license doctors and dentists and anybody that had a professional license except attorneys. Then it was expanded to include other divisions, including condominiums, homes, homeowner associations, co-ops, land sales, and so forth.
And what were they supposed to do? Did they act as sort of a clearinghouse for people in condominiums with problems, or were people supposed to go there for help?
Well, it was the only source that people with condominiums had to apply to besides the courts for any kind of resolution of a condominium problem.
And that didn't work out very well, huh?
Well, it certainly was expensive. It required an attorney for each side, and the outcome was not necessarily just or equal, let's put it that way.
And my understanding is that the condominium owners themselves sort of covered the cost of this. Right? Isn't there a fee for condominium owners that goes directly to fund this program?
Well, each condominium unit owner throughout the state of Florida pays $4 into a trust that is to be used for condominiums or for the betterment and assistance for condominiums.
So
when you have over a million condominium unit owners, then you have a substantial amount of money there.
And the money was being used to fund attorneys on both sides, and it wasn't really working out.
No, well, that money wasn't used to fund attorneys. That money went into a trust with the state. We're speaking about individual lawsuits that condominium owners would take against their board of directors or vice versa. Now, the maintenance fee that every individual unit owner pays for the management of their corporation or their association, that went into a common fund mainly for the maintenance and upkeep of the condominium association. And from that money, the association, through its board of directors, would instigate litigation against unit owners for rule infraction or infraction of the bylaws or declaration of condominiums and its covenants. Likewise, if the unit owner would like to proceed against the board of directors for some infraction that they found against their rights or their individual condominium ownership rights, they could, with their own money, then file suit against the corporation and its board of directors.
So how is your job going to change? I mean, you were just appointed. You've only been at the job, what, for about 2-3 months now?
Yes. In early December, I was appointed by the governor to oversee all the condominiums throughout the state of Florida and see if I could resolve their problems. Not only resolve their problems, it's a very large statute as far as duties and powers. We broke it down into about three aspects. One of the aspects is education. Another aspect is act as a liaison and to resolve disputes. And then the third aspect was to make recommendations to the state legislature as to how to resolve problems that have arisen and where the statutes are inadequate to cover certain problems.
So you've got quite a task ahead of you, eh?
Yes, and you know, since it's a brand new position, it's really hard to ascertain what aspect or what road to go. And surprisingly, ever since we started, when I say we, it's just a one man operation with volunteers. Recently, I was able to hire an administrative assistant to assist me. But what we've devised throughout the last few months is, as times change, and really as people have become more aware that there is a lot of interest in the rights of condominium owners, and we have devised a plan that we would respond to individuals' phone calls and emails and try to make a plan for them to resolve these. And surprisingly, we're able to resolve or at least be able to process about 80% of these calls. And then from there, as time has gone on, things have changed. People have become more knowledgeable as to their rights and responsibilities, not only through my office, but through new legislation. And the news media here in South Florida really has multiple condominium issues that they bring in the newspaper at least 2 and 3 times a week. And as you know, there's quite a few people living in condominiums in South Florida. And because of people's awareness, the problems have changed from just the simple arguments about rules and regulation, but now these people have become more knowledgeable and are contacting us regarding interpretation of the Florida statute in applying it to their condominium and their condominium association and to their declarations or covenants, and they're asking for our assistance. In fact, it's become even surprising to me that recently we've been getting calls regarding getting a lot of calls from the directors of associations where they are disagreeing among themselves on how to properly maintain their association, and some would like to do it what they feel is in an equitable way, which others would feel are contrary to the Florida statutes. And all of a sudden, our position here is really to help inform them as to what the statute is and how it applies to their association, so that the directors can be unified in their decision and in handling these certain situations. It's an interesting progression, and with this type of progression, naturally we have to change our plan of attack. And without me rambling on, it's something that just popped up within the last few days, that now we see a situation where the problem has crystallized to a point where we can set it up for mediation and resolve the situation without litigation or without even going to the Division of Condominiums for arbitration. And we feel really excited about being able to provide this service and resolve these problems.
And Virgil, before we go any further, I want to go back to something you said earlier, because that was not my understanding and impression from what I got. You said that this is a one-man operation with volunteers. I've had Representative Julia Rabina on. I understand that there's a ton of money in this fund, and this fund is supposed to include a fairly substantial staff to help you. This isn't supposed to be a one-man operation.
Well, it's not supposed to, but until until the budget comes out in July, it is a one-man operation. And just recently, like I said, there was some money cut loose from the trust fund to support the office until the annual budget in July. Right now, I'm only permitted to have one office, and that's in Tallahassee. However, all the problems are in South Florida, Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County. I'm unable to operate out of Tallahassee. Unfortunately, the new staff member that I've hired, that luckily was just funded recently, is taking over at the Tallahassee office and will be operating there. So it is right now it is two people and volunteers, but mainly because of the lack of funding, which we anticipate will improve when the new budget happens in July. And that will be for the fiscal year of July to the end of June of 2005.
Do you have an office?
I mean 2006, I'm sorry.
Do you have an office? Are you working out of home? How is this working out?
A lot of it is I'm on the road a lot, and naturally I'm using my own computer and my own resources to take care of a lot of this, and so are the volunteers.
So you're funding a lot of what you're supposed to be doing.
I guess you could say that.
Out of your own pocket?
Yes, you could say that.
Whoa, I was not aware of all of this. How many calls are you getting?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
How many calls are you getting?
Well, there's phone calls and emails, and it's been progressive. It's been progressive since people have learned how to contact us. And right now we're up to about 400 calls a week.
And how well do the Florida residents know about your existence, and do they know that you're there? Do they know how to contact you?
Well, certainly in the South Florida area, because the news media, they whenever somebody writes in or there's a condo event that occurs, the writer or the journalist usually puts in to contact the ombudsman at his email address, and it lists the email address and my Tallahassee phone number.
And has the Division of Business and Professional Regulations done anything to advertise the fact that you exist?
Yes, on their website, they just put on the website there that there is a division of the condominium or Department of Condominium Ombudsman.
I've been doing a little reading here, Virgil, and from what I understand, you are attached to the DBPR, but
yeah, for administrative purposes, I'm attached to the Division of Condominiums, the Department of Business and Professional Regulation.
But you work for the governor directly, right?
Yes, solely under the supervision of the governor. I work at his desire.
Okay, and I guess this is going to be an appointed position, is
yes,
that?
Yes, it is. It is an appointed position.
And,
Well, the reason is that instead of just adding another person to the Division of Condominiums, which apparently wasn't effective in solving a lot of these problems. I mean, they had their own policies and procedures and their own plan and scheme on handling the condominium complaints, but apparently they were ineffective. And the legislature felt that there needed to be somebody who was independent of that division so that that person would not fall within the parameters of their procedures, and that, just like the statute that created the ombudsman, that he could proceed establishing his or her own policies and procedures to take care of the situation. And certainly we are attacking it in a different manner. Now, and what's interesting is, like I was mentioning before, it changes from day to day or week to week as to how we will proceed or how we can proceed. And it's an evolutionary process.
We're talking to Dr. Virgil Rizzo. He's the brand new or almost brand new ombudsman for condominium owners in Florida. Virgil, why is it just condominiums and not homeowners associations as well? Don't they have problems?
Certainly, but evidently the legislature wanted to first take care of the condominiums. But I think the condominiums were in more serious situation, more serious situation than homeowners association. Although homeowners associations certainly have their own problems, but it's a different type of situation. It's a development where individuals own their own homes. Where condominiums, it's more of a community relationship where they live.
So you just buy airspace in a condominium.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
I said you just buy airspace in a condominium.
Well, that would be one way to put it, not necessarily on top of each other, where more in a homeowner situation, each has their individual house and a yard.
You said earlier that you saw your job. I guess you're going to be writing your own job description, right? You're going to be deciding what you need to do and how to tackle this since you're the first one there.
Well, the statute is pretty broad. It's very general as to powers and duties, and certainly I have to. And of course, it says that the ombudsman will establish procedures and policies. So it is very general, and certainly I am in the process of doing that. But still, I don't have enough information to really set a steadfast plan or policy. The plan is there. The plan is in the statute. It's just a matter of how to implement it.
Well, it's kind of hard, no matter how narrow or, you know, how small the role is, and I don't think it's that small, to do it with just one person.
Well, certainly it takes more than one person, and I can't say that I'm solely responsible for establishing policies and procedures. I do have a brain trust that I tap with and speak with and confer with on different situations. I mean, I'm not all-knowing, you know, and I can't profess to be. Even in, for instance, in financial situations where I was asked to make a business plan. Well, I've never had a business plan or made a business plan in my life. And to establish a budget, I don't even have one for my own household. So I had to ask people that did. And I tapped on about four or five people that this is really what they do. And surprisingly, they all came up with a nice piece of work for me. And, of course, I tailored it to the job.
Well, it's good to have those resources behind you. You said that you saw this as a three-parter, education, liaison, and coming up with recommendations. I mean, that's a fairly substantial task to educate. I mean, how many condominium owners do you think there are in Florida? Do you have any idea?
Well, there's about over a million.
Over a million?
Yeah.
So you're going to be educating, well, I guess a million people, because in some of the interviews I read that you've already given to the print media, you talk about the rights and responsibilities of the board members and of the unit owners themselves. It's a two-way street.
Correct.
And you're very... And from everything I've read, you're very much in a neutral position.
Well, I'm supposed to be in a neutral, an impartial position, and I have to be. I mean, there's my personal feelings about situations can't come into play. What's important is that the proper interpretation of the statute, the Florida statute regarding condominiums, is properly applied to the individual situations. And again, here I tap my legal resources for their input. And the Florida statute of the Condominium Act is not infallible. There are, as people say, loopholes. And I heard something the other day from a condominium director and officer. He said, "Well, there's gray areas of the law here under the Condominium Act," and of course when they want to do something in a certain way, they feel that they have the complete right, and they feel that they're above the law because they feel that it's not specific enough and that there are gray areas. And again, this falls into one of the other aspects of my job, is to recommend to the legislature how to handle these certain situations. And recently, just a few weeks ago, the legislature convened, and there are many condominium statutes that are bills that are being presented to cover a myriad of situations. And of course, being that it's my job, in that I deal with the people, you know, at a base level, that I can glean this information and then formulate it into a statute or a proposed statute, and then forward it on to the legislature, and show them where the problem is, and make a suggestion on how to correct it. I think this is probably one of the most interesting aspects of this job.
Well, I had Representative Julio Rabino on, and I called him America's sweetheart, because I think a lot of states, a lot of homeowners in a lot of different states really envy Floridians for having him there. And he has a bill that's pending in the legislature right now that's over 100 pages long. And when I said something to him on the air, I said, Julio, it's 104 pages long. He says, don't you start with me, Shu. So he's really trying to get in a lot of comprehensive reforms in there.
Certainly. And certainly a lot of them are needed. A lot of them are needed. And, of course, you know, they're not straightforward. I mean, there's controversy regarding a lot of these issues. And I must commend Representative Rabina for taking on this task. He's a one man dynamo here that has heard from condominium owners, you know, their complaints, and some were so egregious that he couldn't just simply turn his head. He had to take some action, and he felt personally, I'm sure he felt personally, that these things were not just and weren't right, and he took it on himself to try to rectify it.
Well, he was on last year, and he said that, you know, he's not giving up on this fight. He's going to make sure that everything is squared away. He was on when I called him and invited him to come on. He was watching Tiger Woods on a golf course. He took time out to go find the phone and call me and call into the show. As a result of him being on the Commons, I think two or three weeks ago, he was invited by a radio show, a real estate radio show out in Arizona, to be on their show today. So they had heard him on the Commons and then invited him to go on. So, you know, he's making a hell of an impact across the country.
Well, it's a big issue.
It's
a big issue right now. And, I mean, it's the condominium ownership is every year keeps getting larger and larger. And these problems have to be dealt with. And he's not the only legislator. He's not the only legislator. There must be another six or eight legislators, senators, and representatives throughout the state of Florida that have their own bills covering different aspects that they feel need to be addressed. And it's amazing. It's amazing that the awareness that is created, and it's like a freight train, you know, picking up speed, and for good reason too. It needs to be taken care of.
Well, I think he was the first one who just really was passionate about it and, you know, refused to be intimidated and backed down. He just stood his ground. And I think others came along, and that's great. And I understand there's a bill currently also to curtail at least foreclosures, right, in Florida?
Well, not only in Florida. The bill Senator Siplin has proposed is to put a limit on foreclosures. What would transpire is that somebody would, and you have to understand, a lot of these people are elderly. They make a mistake in writing their maintenance instead of making it, we'll say $320. They just all of a sudden think it's $300 or write $300. So this puts them $20 in arrears regarding the maintenance, and then when they're informed of that, they say, well, gee, I, I thought I paid it, and I wrote this check, and I thought it was paid. And instead of resolving the situation or speaking to the individual, the association's attorneys, they file a lien. And then along with the lien, they file a foreclosure on a $20 mistake. And before the person knows it, they're in foreclosure because of $20 and maybe an additional $20 for a late fee and then attorney's fees on top of that, and they're looking at a huge bill for a $20 mistake. And that's just one situation. Another situation, an elderly lady who took care of her own business and wrote her own checks and took care of herself, had no family, fell and fractured her hip and was incapacitated for quite some time in a nursing home. And when she was able to go back to her home, she found it was in foreclosure. And these are the things that bill's trying to stop. And it's a $2,500 limit before a lien or foreclosure action can take place. And what's surprising is that the associations and the directors are saying, well, this is going to put this $2,500 is going to put such a burden on the rest of the condominium owners.
That's nonsense. They've been singing that song for a long time, and it's absolute bunk.
Let me just say this. I tell these directors, I said, if you are managing the association's finances, it's such a tight method where $2,500 is going to put you fast in the red that you can't pay your bills, then you're mismanaging the association.
Well, one of their complaints or one of their, Chicken Little, it's one of their Chicken Little things. Well, gee whiz, if we can't foreclose, nobody's going to pay. And that's absolute nonsense.
There's other safeguards being put into place before the foreclosure. In fact, it's one of the provisions that I have proposed is that before you even do a foreclosure, you have to serve the person with a notice of their deficit and the reason of the deficit before you even file a lien. And when I say serve, that means make sure that they get it and that they understand why they're being liened or why they're going to be liened, and give them a chance to take care of this. They're saying, well, these deadbeats are going to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Well, not if they have notice. And this is the main problem. These people just don't have notice of the problem. If they say, well, I can't understand why, I'm in arrears. I wrote my check. And so it would just take a little bit of effort from the association management to say, well, ma'am, you wrote your check $20 short. Oh, my gosh. And if they could show her that, she'd gladly take it instead of be looking at a foreclosure action.
Virgil, some of them refuse to cash checks. Some associations get the checks and they refuse to cash them. And I think that ought to be a criminal offense.
Well, you're right. And that issue came up yesterday again, too, where somebody had suggested that I pass on to the legislator that some action be taken against these management companies, especially when they refuse to accept checks, and when you try to hand deliver it, they refuse to give you a receipt. And even to the point where they're saying, well, we got your certified letter, but there was nothing in it.
That's abuse.
And the situation is there's a relationship between the management company and a law firm where they just look for these situations to go toward litigation. And I haven't investigated these, but I've heard them, and I don't have the staff to get involved with it, but it's certainly something that we are keeping our eye on.
I've had an industry attorney who came on the show and said that he had been told by his colleagues that they have mailed empty envelopes with return receipt requested and claimed that they have served notice. when in fact there was nothing there.
Well,
they lose checks, they sit on checks, they don't do, you know, it's just totally ridiculous.
Well, sure, you know, the basic problem is, you know, personal communication. There's, you know, if these people would communicate,
it's abuse
know,
of power,
it would obviate all the problems.
It's abuse of power because these people have the power and they abuse it.
That's true.
We're going to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back with a lot more with Dr. Virgil Rizzo from Florida. Stay tuned. WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And on the Commons with us today is Dr. Virgil Rizzo. Dr. Rizzo is the first ombudsman in Florida, sir, and the first ombudsman, we believe, who is strictly there for condominium owners. But I also think that that's going to change if pending legislation is enacted. Virgil, when we were off the air, you said I mentioned the industry earlier, and you said you didn't know who the industry was, and I said I would come back and clarify it. The industry to me, when I mentioned the industry, is anybody who makes a living off of associations, not the homeowners, but who are there in a supporting role for the associations, whether they're management companies or managers or attorneys or landscapers or pool people or CPAs, anybody, and anybody who is a member of the Community Associations Institute, which is a lobbying organization for associations, not individual homeowners. So the attorney that I was talking about was one of the good guys, and there are some good guys on both sides. You know, he's the one who told me, and he told me on the air, so I don't have a problem. It wasn't something he told me off the air, so I don't have a problem repeating it. Anyway, did I clarify that adequately, Virgil?
Well, it sounds good to me.
Okay. no, I don't, and I'm certainly not trying to put anybody on the spot here. If I did, I do apologize. What's the main complaint that you get, Virgil? What is it that you're hearing out of the 400 calls you're getting a week? What are people complaining about?
Okay, you know, recently, you know, when it first started out, we were hearing quite a few complaints about rule and regulation violations. Now things have changed, it's progressed. Now we're hearing more about the mismanagement of the association, not only from the unit owners, but also from the directors. They feel that they are not managing their own association properly, and they're looking for guidance. And we look at this, we're excited. We look at this as a step forward in that we have accomplished something. Not only my office, I think, but the awareness of individual condominium owners' ability to have a voice and to have somebody hear the problems and be able to look at some resource material and determine that there are laws governing a lot of their situations, but they have some trouble discerning the legalese in applying it to their situations. But besides the mismanagement, and it's either it's general mismanagement or fiscal mismanagement, these people are quite intelligent now. They're learning, and they realize that there are responsibilities and that they must take care of. But one of the other things is that takes up a lot of my time is the condominium elections. We attend probably at least two condominium elections a week, and these are usually from 7 o'clock until 11 o'clock at night at different condominiums.
Two a week.
Now I have volunteered volunteer election monitors, and I've trained quite a few. I think I have probably now about six election monitors that I can entrust to conduct an election. And surprisingly, there almost at every election that we go to, a new problem arises that's not addressed by the law, and it requires a decision on my part, a legal decision on the procedure to follow to complete the election. And it has created an awareness that when an election monitor from the state is there at the election, that fairness will prevail. And we're sort of happy, but it's certainly taken over a serious part of the office's time.
I think I neglected to mention that you're both a medical doctor and an attorney as well. Right?
That's correct.
Okay, so you can give legal advice.
With a medical twist.
With a medical twist.
Well, actually, you know, it's interesting. It's my education as a scientist, you know, being a medical doctor, and before that, I taught sciences in high school before I went to medical school.
Oh my goodness!
Science background has helped me tremendously in being able to analyze these situations and to present an analogy. It's similar that when a person calls with a condominium complaint, it's similar to a person who's coming to see a doctor with a complaint, an illness. And then to proceed, you have to reach a diagnosis and go through a differential diagnosis, take some tests, do some studies, and then formulate a solution to their medical problem and on the other aspect, a solution to their condominium problem. It's interesting. And even in the same vein, I used to play chess prep professionally. And of course there you learn to, before you make a move, you have to know what the response is, what your opponent's response is. Are going to be, and then how you're going to proceed. You just can't, go right into a situation. You have to know how the outcome will be. And all this makes a difference in how we handle and plan our policies and procedures.
I would say that you are probably the single most qualified person for this job in the entire country. Because all of your backgrounds, whether it's medicine, the law, or even chess, comes into play, huh?
Well, this is why we grow. You know, when we grow up, we should learn everything, and then eventually we can probably use it somewhere down the line.
That sounds really interesting. I understand that there's a bill that's pending in the legislature, some talk about imposing term limits on board members.
Yes, correct. This is a problem. I mean, there's directors that get into the management of a condominium association, and it becomes their life, their hobby. And the demographics of the condominiums changed. You know, the people are not elderly people anymore, even though they say, well, we're a 55 and over condominium. But there's a lot of younger people moving into the condominiums. And the younger people have their own ideas, and they have their own type of lifestyle that they would like to pursue. But then they find themselves being pitted up against the older individuals in their 80s that want their old methods to prevail in the lifestyle of the condominium, and there's a problem. And these people don't want to give up. These older people don't want to give up their position. Yes, I must agree that they have knowledge of years in managing the condominium, but times have changed, and procedures have changed, technology has changed, and they should step aside to allow some of this new blood to come in to infuse new ideas into the management of the association. But I don't think these people will survive if they are removed from their offices. But the proposal is that directors only serve one or two time limits, and I don't know how that's going to go over. But my feeling is that as officers of the corporation, the officers have a little more power than just the general directors. The directors instruct the officers on how to act, but we have a situation where the officers are acting without the direction and without the blessing and of the board of directors. And their actions reflect on their personal feelings, their personal agendas, and their personal ideas of how things should be run. My feeling is that the officers should be limited, not necessarily the directorship, but the officer should not serve for more than one term. In other words, a president shouldn't be there for more than 10 years. He shouldn't be there for more than one. Let somebody else take the helm that has different ideas, and let the directors then determine. And then, of course, the directors, you know, they don't want to give up their position. In fact, the elections that we monitor, we're finding that the directors are fighting for the positions among themselves. Besides new people coming in with new ideas, you know, the older ones want to control the other older ones. And it's an unusual situation, but it's very interesting.
But what you're telling me doesn't exactly square with what we hear from, again, I'm going to use the term, the industry, that people just aren't stepping forward, and a lot of associations are not having their annual elections because there are no candidates. Nobody wants to run for the board.
No, not anymore. Surprisingly. People want to step up. They feel that they have a chance. They feel they have an opportunity to have a say in the management of their association. I mean, there was one election we did the other day. There were 7 candidates for 3 seats, and you know one of the complaints are that, well, you can't limit somebody's term because there are no candidates. To the contrary, there are so many candidates now that you know, you have to certainly give them a chance. But these people that have been in power for so long, they will do anything to keep it, even to the point of committing election fraud. You know, and this is one thing that the office has, you know, can offer now, is that when a certain number of unit owners petition the ombudsman's office, we will come in there and conduct your election to prevent fraud.
How do you do that? I mean, you have how many condominium associations? Like, how can one person with, what, 6 volunteers handle all of this?
Well, we're trying to.
It sounds like you're going to be spreading.
It's exciting. You know, I'm sort of an evening person. I don't mind. It's entertainment to go to a condominium election and see for lack of a better, the finagling that goes on, you know, the fighting over one vote, whether it's a valid vote or whether it was improperly cast. It's interesting. It's better than television.
Oh, I agree with you.
but Shu, you know, it's when we go to elections, what we're really looking for are problems with the procedure. Problems that need to be addressed so that in the next few years that elections will be in such a format that there is no possibility of fraud.
How do you think how can you do that?
Well, set some hard and fast rules. We just set down some hard and fast rules regarding the handling of the ballots and the mailing out of the ballots and verifying that the person voting is the proper person to be voting for that unit.
And of course,
avoid the situation where candidates are not harassing other candidates. I've seen situations where people wanted to run, and the members from the board just go over and intimidate that person to the point that they withdraw their candidacy.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. That happens, and people.
I mean, that's got to stop. That's nonsense. I mean, to threaten somebody with everything but bodily harm, you know, some damage to their car, or damage to their boat, or they'll be. In fact, when a director gets in there, have threats from the other directors saying, "We're going to watch you. You make a mistake, and we're going to come after you." This is nonsense.
We're talking to Dr. Virgil Rizzo, the new ombudsman for, the newly appointed ombudsman for condominiums in Florida. Some years ago, so there was court records showed that a manager in Texas actually sent out it was some inordinate amount of violation notices to people that she thought would vote against her. And the reason she did that was because the governing documents in that particular association, and I guess it's in a lot of associations as well, say that you cannot vote if you've had a violation notice sent. So right before elections, about 80% of the population there gets a violation notice. The only people allowed to vote are the people that are on the side of management. And there you go.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of methods to being able for associations to, or for directors to keep themselves in power, and we have to break that stronghold. It's just not fair.
How do you think it's fair to take away somebody's right to vote in an election? To disqualify them? I mean, that doesn't happen in the real world, does it, Virgil?
Well, you know, it's true. It doesn't. I mean, even a convicted felon can have his rights restored to vote. But I've encountered situations here where the Division of Condominium, the arbitrators, have overruled the right of condominium owners to vote on a certain issue because the board had decided that issue will go forward regardless. And I said, well, this can only happen in Florida, where you can't have the right to vote where it's written there in your declaration, in your covenants, that you have the right to vote.
So wait a minute.
These problems I can't see. It's just, and another instance, for instance, to bring up that has come up is somebody produces a power of attorney, and this is a very interesting issue, that the Division of Condominiums will not allow somebody to vote for a director with the power of attorney. And I find it's inconsistent, you know, with the law. If you can have a power of attorney for somebody to terminate your life, or a power of attorney to buy a condominium, why can't your power of attorney be used to exercise your vote?
Yeah. And what about proxies?
Pay your pardon?
I said, what about proxies? Do they disallow proxies, too? Do they play with those?
Proxies are not allowed in condominiums.
Oh, they're not?
They're not allowed to be used for votes in condominiums. Likewise, you know, power of attorneys aren't either. And, however, in homeowner association, proxies are. See? And this, and I don't want to get into the situation of homeowners association. I'm not ready to tackle that problem.
But next time you will be, huh?
please.
Well, next time you come on, you'll have homeowner associations as well.
Well, you know, if I have staff that I can appoint to different aspects of this job that are taking up quite a bit of time, and that they can be experts in those certain areas, it'll work out.
Well, you do need the staff. I mean, this is ridiculous to make it a one-man job. It's impossible.
Well,
yeah, there are a number of us advocates across the country, and we field a lot of questions, and we get a lot of people calling us and emailing us and saying, you know, this is what's happening, can we help? And we can help some of them, but it's impossible to get to all of them, Virgil.
Well, right now we're only at 400 a week, so we can still handle it. I mean, it's just many a late night before I get through with my email responses. And if I have two or three elections in a row, I do get behind a day or two. And yes, it requires staff. In fact, I was just thinking today that I have to have a new new email address so that I can allow more volunteers to access it, because I can't keep up with it.
Wow, that's Yeah, you know, and I've seen ombudsman's positions across the country that have been set up to fail, and one of the reasons is they're not releasing funds, they're not making it easy for the ombudsman to do their jobs.
Well, that may be by design, Sue.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It was set up for failure. And it's just sort of a placebo to the homeowners. Here we go. We gave you an ombudsman, and it didn't work out. Now what more do you want? There was a
Well, Sue, I have a different attitude about it. This job needs to be done. I'm certainly not doing it for the money. It's a job that the people really need to have somebody their champion, somebody to bring this forward to the forefront and resolve the situation. And as you can see, this is probably Representative Urbina's whole position, is that he's got to take care of it. And he's doing a great job, and he's getting a lot of support. He's getting a lot of support from the rest of the legislature, and I'm really happy for him. I really am.
Well, things must have changed, because last year he told me that a lot of his colleagues came up to him and said, "You're on the right track, I agree with you, but unfortunately I cannot vote for your bills because my constituents don't want me to do that." I won't elaborate on that, but if you have any kind of an imagination out there for my listeners, I think you can understand what I'm trying to tell you. Virgil, good luck. We're almost out of time here. But is there anything that, how can the homeowners themselves help you, and how can me, how can I, because it's, again, it's a one-man show here, a one-woman show, how can I help you, and how can the homeowners help you do your job, because I really want to see, I really want to see this work.
Well, the biggest problem in the past is the apathy. A lot of these people do not want to speak out for fear of reprisals from their directors and from their boards, or mistreatment or mishandling. When they needed a favor or something under a certain situation, you had to get the permission of the president. And the term condo commando, I think, was used quite often, and now that term is starting to fade, because they realize that there's legal responsibility involved here. These are corporations. These are nonprofit corporations, and there's liability there. If they don't conduct themselves within the confines of the law, these individual directors are going to be personally liable. And, you know, if they proceed a little bit too aggressively, they're going to get hurt physically, and they should avoid that. And my recommendations to the owners are that the apathy should be put aside. They should step up. They should speak together and get together. Their voice is being heard. We are listening. Speak up. Step forward. Don't turn your head. Don't turn the other cheek. Speak up. And Shu, I mean, it's you're bringing awareness to these people, and I hope that they get the message from you too.
Well, I'm going to end with one quote of yours that I found in one of the print interviews that you had, and you said, "The board is running a corporation for the unit owners. You can't be running it as policemen." And when I read that, I thought that just about said it all. That hit the nail right on the head. Virgil, thank you so much for joining us today. I wish you all the luck in the world. And, if there's anything that I can do for you here on the Commons, please don't hesitate to let me know.
Certainly, if an issue comes up, and, this year is going to be very interesting in Florida with all the new legislation, and I'm sure there's got to... the controversy is creating a lot of awareness, and I'd like these people to realize, that you have a voice. Talk to your people. Talk to your representatives. Call us.
Call your ombudsman.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, gosh. Where do I get some more staff? Speak up. Your representatives are listening, and they're aware, and you want them to act on your behalf. And, Shu, you certainly are making it possible by putting these people on notice that we're behind them, but they have to step forward.
Speak up, guys. Call your ombudsman. Thank you all for hanging out with us on the Commons today. Please join us on the Commons every Saturday, same time, same place. Stay tuned, stay free. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See you all next week.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.